Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Israelite Newspaper Podcast, the Let There Be Light Podcast, and I am one of your hosts, Netanel Ted Deutsch.
And I am Julie Babs Bernson-Brook, and we have a special...
She's got like five last names.
Yes, Yehuda Basha.
Yehuda Basha. Ben.
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 Shlomo.
Shlomo. Ben Shlomo.
Vehanah Gittel.
Hannah Gittel. Hey, Gavaltsky. That's, you know, that's at the end of that, should say... Oy Gavaltsky.
And my mother is Hannah Gittel Kohane. She's a Kohane.
She's a Kohane.
Yes, she was a Katz, a real Katz.
Oh.
And we have with us a special guest host we're really excited to have with us.
Yes, yes.
And my name is Len Singer, and I only have two names. I'm sorry.
Dr. Leonard.
Dr. Leonard.
Dr. Leonard.
You don't have a middle name, Joshua?
Joshua is my middle name, Joshua. Yeah, but I never use it.
You never use it?
Except
Yeshua.
For the TSA.
And what's your Hebrew name?
Yehuda Yehoshua.
Okay. Very nice.
Very nice. Very
who
nice.
Who you named after?
My grandfather on one side and the other grandfather on the other side, neither of whom made it alive through World War II, and so I never met them.
Mm.
It's interesting, I was reading the obituaries in the Cincinnati Enquirer this week, and
right.
There was a woman who was born in Germany, and it says in there, she's definitely not a Jewish woman,
right.
It says in there, unfortunately her father died during World War II. I want to say, you know, like, let's clarify this, you know, because...
Maybe he was a German.
Maybe he was a German soldier,
right.
You know,
been,
but it was,
unfortunately
he died in World War II.
A lot of people died.
A sentence that left me wondering.
Right, right. Well, probably left a lot. Well, they didn't, but you're probably right about who he really was, and they just, you know, how do we
skimmed
present,
over
right,
it.
How do we present this to the public?
Right.
And so it's best to kind of stealthily mention it like that.
Right, and they talked about then who took care of her, because I guess her mother passed away shortly after that for some other reason, but yeah, so she was raised by somebody else. But it was an interesting story. Anyway, today is the last day of March, and tomorrow will be April 1st when the newspaper comes out. It will also be the 19th of Nisan, 5781.
Right. Yep.
So we're moving right along, and spring is here, and it's actually a very beautiful day. Yesterday was very beautiful, too. We're expecting a little bit of cold weather tomorrow, which is opening day for the Reds.
Yeah, and the cherry blossoms. All the cherry blossoms are out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's nice.
I think opening day, you might see some snow.
That's what they said, but you have to be hopeful. And as long as the sun is shining, people will be out there.
I was watching the news last night, and the last time it snowed was like in 2000, and I was at that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it snowing on opening day. I didn't realize it was 21 years ago.
Well, they're expecting large crowds because people are feeling very good again. This issue was supposed to be the doctor's issue, so we still have it as somewhat of a doctor's issue, which is why we brought Dr. Len Singer here.
Right.
And also it's about, we're going to talk about spring and COVID and recovery. Well, and so I think people are feeling pretty darn good. What do you think, Lenny? What's going on at your house? How was, you know, what went on with your Passovers this year versus last year? And what are you thinking?
Well, I'll tell you. Part of it is we were fortunate enough to get vaccinated fairly early. And my daughter in Boston, where we spend Passover, is a nurse. So she was vaccinated and her husband got vaccinated. So the stress went away.
Yeah,
you know, it was
a small
Seder,
right.
And no one was too stressed. Of course, the kids haven't been vaccinated. Although, as an aside, today there was an announcement that Pfizer has had good success with their 12 to 16-year-old trial. So that's pretty exciting. But, you know, it is a changing environment, and I think one of the points that needs to be emphasized is that we're going through a transition time. This is going to be kind of challenging. One of the things I've noticed is even people who have gotten vaccinated and feel very safe, they're still restricting their activity more than they need to. And by that I mean, look, Tony Fauci, who I have enormous respect for, has said, if you're going to get together with a small group and everyone's vaccinated, that's good. It's cool. And yet you find a lot of people are still very resistant to doing that.
Well, because I think because of the variants.
Well, the variants.
Now they're bringing that up, and everybody's kind of a little bit scared about that. Like, even though if I've had the vaccine, could I get one of these variations, and then I'm going to get sick again?
And I think the key word in that previous sentence was scared.
Yeah.
Because there's a ton of fear, and a lot of that fear is not necessarily really justified. Mm-hmm. Look, the variants at this point are a potential. It's a risk, and it's out there, and we're worried about it. And apparently Rochelle Walensky is very worried about it because she was crying on national TV.
Can you explain who Rochelle Walensky is?
Okay, I'm sorry. Rochelle is the new CDC director. Right. She's an infectious disease doctor and very, very respected in the medical community. But, you know, from my perspective, it's important that leaders like that don't cry on TV. Yeah. It's just, it kind of distresses people that their leadership are, you know, getting a little bit hysterical. And as I said, it's a potential. It is out there. There's no question that it's going to be a problem. To date, as far as we know, the vaccines are very effective. And they're very effective against the variant, as far as we know. Now, South Africa variant is a little bit of an anomaly, but it hasn't really been a problem here yet. The British variant, it just doesn't seem to be an issue. The vaccines that are out there are effective.
So I had my second on Sunday, March 21st, and Monday and Tuesday, I was just, as I've brought up in the podcast before, I was just wiped out.
Okay, well, and that's an important point, too.
Yeah, and I think people should be prepared that how you're going to react to it, you might react mildly, and you might react like I had, and I was, like, just blown away.
That's very true. But, again, going back to the fear piece, that should not stop anyone from getting the vaccine.
Because COVID, getting sick,
has so many bad potentials, even if you're not really that sick. You know, one of the things that people don't appreciate, I think, is this long-haul COVID. It has various names, but apparently people, even those who are asymptomatic, a fair number of them, estimates up to maybe a third, are actually experiencing long-term problems, whether with their heart or lungs or brain. Mm. And so, to me, the trade-off is there is no trade-off.
No, I totally agree with you. You have to get vaccinated.
No,
yes. And be prepared.
The side effects are very variable. I had my vaccine within a day of my wife, and I had zero symptoms, nothing. I had a little bit of soreness in my arm and less than I had from the last flu vaccine, whereas my wife was out for 2 days, as you say. So it's a totally variable thing, and usually it passes quickly, and usually it's fairly minor.
Right. So,
Well, I would like to just talk a little bit about Rochelle Walensky, just because I have a lot of interest in her, and, you know, first of all, she's Jewish. So another MOT proudly working for the government and saving all of us, which is a wonderful thing. She's married to a Jewish man whose name happens to be Lauren, which is the same as my son, Lauren. So I like that a lot.
All right.
Don't roll your eyes at me, Ted. I think that's what's important is that, you know, I think that we bring people on that have amazing educations. And she comes from Johns Hopkins and Harvard Medical School, and it's nice to know that we have these wonderful people that are taking care of us through the CDC. You know, Fauci has an unbelievable resume, and you too have an amazing resume. Lenny, why don't you tell us a little bit about your educational background?
Well, firstly, I grew up in Old Brooklyn. So I make that distinction because it's very, very different than the current Brooklyn.
The hipster Brooklyn.
The hipster Brooklyn. This was totally non-hipster. Mm. But there are trees in Brooklyn. That is a true statement. and I had a very, very traditional background. I went to a yeshiva, which was boys only. And, you know, Brooklyn was not such a friendly place in those days. Brooklyn was a little bit tough because there was a lot of ethnic differences and challenges. And but overall, I think I had a very good childhood. I had a good education at a yeshiva, as I said.
But it must have been a more progressive educational yeshiva, not so much of what the black hats are doing now, where they're not teaching some of the basic science and maths.
No,
because you got into further education too.
Let me just say this. I think there's a general misconception about the traditional yeshiva vote. They run the gamut. The yeshiva I went to, I would still consider it as traditional as you can possibly imagine. But I will say this, it had the second highest scores on the Regents exams, which if you're from New York, you remember the Regents exams. These were high school kind of exams that you had to complete to graduate. Mm. And in the city, of the entire city, next to the Bronx School of Science, which was number one, we were number two. And this was a school where we spent from 7 a.m. till 2 p.m. studying Talmud and Gemara and et cetera. And you only had like a little 4-hour slot for the whole rest of your education. And nevertheless, most kids went to college. Many, many were very successful in university. And so I think that it just depends. There's a lot of variation. But I did have a good education there. And then I went to Brooklyn College, which again, for the New Yorkers among our listeners, is a very different school today. Mm. At that time when I went, there were, I think, 5 or 6 Nobel laureates on the faculty. Wow. And it was a free school. It was part of the City University of New York, literally free. Mm. I think my only cost to attend 4 years of college was the registration fee every semester and books. And that was about it. Mm. And so and it was a superb.
You lived at home.
I lived at home. Okay. Used to ride my bicycle to school. Okay. I was in great shape in those days. Because it was a couple miles each way. But, and then I went to New York Medical College, which was in outside of the city by that point. It was up in Westchester. And then I did my residency between Rhode Island and Cleveland and et cetera. I don't know how far you want me to delve into
that. Yeah, and you're trained as a surgeon, correct, but now you specialize in disaster emergency. You went on and you went to Boston, and you also got a master's degree in science. A Master of Science in Emergency.
Yeah, let me tell you how that happened. And it's kind of a bizarre little story. So actually going back to 9/11, I remember clearly that day, as most of us do. And I remember thinking, gee, it's great what I'm doing and I love what I'm doing, but I really have to do something more. I feel like there's an obligation almost. And so I started getting involved with emergency medicine, disaster mm-hmm. medicine, which is its own field now, and emergency management and the intersection between those two. And so I volunteered a lot, and I actually started teaching, as you mentioned, in Boston. And that was a startup program within the College of Medicine at BU. And they had just started a master's program and were looking for faculty. And so I got involved with that. That was all online, pre-Zoom days. And I got a master's from them as well. And then I traveled a bit. I did some other work for other government agencies. And it was very, very gratifying as long as it lasted. And over the years, things kind of, people lost a little bit of interest in emergency management because we had no other disasters, thank God. And so that went away for the most part. But it was fun. It was very educational, and we kind of made our own path because it was a brand new field.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I know that you've traveled to a number of places to work on some of these disasters. You went to New Orleans. You were lecturing for the State Department in Sarajevo. You've also been to Puerto Rico to help. Mm. These have all kind of shaped where you are today. Because actually, how did you get to Cincinnati? I mean,
Why are you here in Cincinnati?
Yeah, am I here in Cincinnati? Personally, let me just say that Cincinnati is home, and we absolutely love it here. It's been a wonderful place to raise children. And really to have a career. And this comes from a pretty dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker.
We won't get into the Passover shopping and looking for ketchup.
Well, you can't find it. You can get everything on the internet.
You can get everything on the internet now.
So when I completed my residency in Cleveland, the two things that I was pretty sure of was I really didn't want to stay in Cleveland. I'm sorry if you're from Cleveland.
Yes, I've been to Cleveland many. My family's from Cleveland.
Very cold. Yeah. And I really didn't know where I wanted to go, and it looked like there was an opportunity in Cincinnati, and my in-laws were still in Cleveland, so we wanted to be close enough to visit them. And so I picked Cincinnati.
But you had a sister in Cincinnati,
I did.
Too.
Oh, okay.
I did, who has since moved to Israel.
Because she has a number of children that live in
That's
Israel.
That's correct.
Yeah, so, and now we're at that older age, and it's kind of fitting that the first story in The Israelite is the Jewish home of Cincinnati.
This has just been all your big lead-in to the first story, wasn't it?
Pretty long lead-in, huh?
That was a long lead-in. That was like a 20-minute lead-in.
Sorry.
Selects Nina Perlov to lead their grant-making initiative, so...
Well, the Jewish home of Cincinnati came out of the Cedar Village. Well, there always has been a Jewish home of Cincinnati.
Right. They also had Golf Manor and they had Jewish home. They had
exactly.
The Orthodox Jewish home and they had Golf Manor. When we moved here, Lenny and I moved here on the same year, same time.
86.
June of 1986.
Right. Yeah, because the residencies all end in the end of June.
Right. And actually how we met was there was a woman that worked at Jewish who was wanting to make sure, who her job was to make sure the physicians were happy. And she had heard that Lenny's wife at the time, and Lenny's wife, right. Tova.
Still the same wife.
Yeah, still the same wife. And myself, we were both very unhappy to have moved here. And so Barry came home one day with a piece of paper and he said, I can't remember her name, the woman that fixed
Janice
us.
Janice Fahlstrom,
there we go. Janice Fahlstrom gave me this name. The wife there is also very unhappy. Look at their names, Tova and Lenny Singer. And I think I said, I think they're Jewish. And we called you up. I called Tova, and I met Tova at that time.
You hit it off.
We hit it off, and we've been besties. And you had Melissa.
We did.
And I had Lauren.
And Jennifer.
And you were pregnant with Jennifer.
Right. And Jennifer is now a nurse in Boston.
Yeah. And so I have a Melissa now, too. And you have a Laura. So it kind of all works out.
Right.
And in the meantime, that's how I met Lenny, and we became friends right away. But Tova learned to love Cincinnati a lot faster than I did.
Okay.
A lot faster.
She's never really forgiven me for dragging her away from Cleveland and her friends, but, you know, we're over it.
Well, last week we talked about...
Cincinnati is so much, I don't know, it's more genteel than Cleveland.
So.
Cleveland is
East Coast.
Yeah,
it really is, because I'll be up there next week, and there's more traffic, there's more people,
the Jews there are also a little bit more aggressive. They're Chicago, New York style.
We're more laid back here.
And as I said, when I came here, I said this was near Adah. You know, when you go to Israel, it's Aliyah. When you come to Cincinnati, I don't know from Cleveland if it's a lateral move, you know.
I like to believe it was a very good move for us.
Yeah. Oh, I was born and raised, so. All right, so Jewish home of Cincinnati selects Nina Perlov. And
Lenny made a point when he first walked in that he found this article very interesting because of the...
Well, there's a quote in there that I kind of appreciate, and that is, recognizing the changing needs of today's seniors. And then it goes on into their grant-making initiative.
Right.
But there's no question in my mind that the needs of seniors has changed dramatically, over the last year more than anything.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, for those of us who had parents in nursing homes, it was a disastrous year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You didn't get to see them.
Right.
A lot of them, unfortunately, passed on.
My mom, yeah.
And it really has changed things. I think that, and together with the fact that the boomers are now aging, and there's going to be a lot more pressure on facilities and housing for boomers, and how are we going to work that out? There's not enough beds in nursing homes in the country to fill that need. So we're going to have to think of creative approaches to how seniors will age when we get to that age. And hopefully this initiative will be very helpful.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly they're going to need to do... I mean, like, my mother-in-law had trouble working the television, the smart television. The new seniors are going to be sharp when they get in there. And it's going to be... There's probably people our age probably already in the homes.
You know, it's something... when I would go to Cedar Village, there are people that were, like, around my age. And I was like, whoa, I was blown away.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, some of the people that I'd known in high school didn't, I guess you'd say they didn't age well, or they aged prematurely, and they were, had some, either mental issues or physical issues, and there was like one or two, and it just,
it's a shock.
It was a shock.
And on that same note, more and more of our contemporaries are passing away, and and it's
that's a shock too.
It's a shock too. It's a bit, and we will read about that this week in the obituaries.
Right,
but
right.
On to a better thing. On page four, local scouts are invited to the Lagbo Mare celebration.
Yeah, right.
And I was a Girl Scout all the way through high school, and you said you were a scout.
I was a Boy Scout.
Yeah. I was not a Boy Scout. No, but. I appreciated what they did. Obviously, things have changed a little bit for the Boy Scouts, but
Well, it'll get back to normal. So, Lagba Omer is on Thursday, April 29th, and there's going to be a bonfire at Wise Temple in Amberley from 8 to 10 p.m. So, if you're a scout, you were a scout.
You want to be a scout.
You can go to the Lagba Omer event. But there's always campfires and bonfires around Lagba Omer.
Yeah, and I don't know where that comes from, but that's the case in Israel as well. I remember very well, at age 12, I made my first trip to Israel with my mother, and we went to a town up in the north called Miron, where it's like a center of attraction for Lagba Omer, and there are literally thousands and thousands of people who go just for that day. It's a big deal.
Huh. Well, we should explain what is Lagba Omer. It's the 33rd day of the Omer. It's when you begin counting the Omer.
Counted Monday night.
And we begin counting on Monday night because it's the end
of Passover and Shavuos.
Right. Yeah, and there's actually an interesting story coming up about Shavuos that we're going to get to, too. But on the rest of the community calendar, there's a lot of stuff coming up, and the Yums are coming up. And we will hopefully get to talk to Gail Levine Schneider at one point, not today, but next week, about what to cook. She says it's an Israeli.
I will be gone next week on my
catching trip. We have a guest host that week. It's Pam Sayles. Is coming in.
When I leave,
double trouble.
Yeah, double trouble. You're supposed to uphold the journalistic ethics and standards that I set for you two here today.
Well, I also suggested that she pack herself a nice ham and cheese sandwich
for lunch on some Wonder Bread. That is not
and that's Dr. Sakes' daughter, if I'm not mistaken.
Daughter-in-law.
Okay.
Daughter-in-law.
I knew Dr. Sakes very well.
From
Jewish Hospital, who was really one of the premier surgeons in town.
Mm. Okay, so Yams are coming up next week.
And
so everybody get ready.
So one of the articles that you spoke about when you walked in, Lenny, was on page 7, under the tattered copy of Protocols of Elders of Zion was found in the Capitol Police Station.
Yeah.
So
that's a horrible story.
Well, you know who paid for that, don't you?
No.
Henry Ford.
Oh, you mean the original, yeah.
Henry Ford paid for that.
Right.
And you know what? If you ever watched, I remember watching this whole history of Henry Ford on TV. And the one guy that gave him money to begin with was this guy named Birnbaum. Do you remember that?
No.
If you go back and watch this was
that's the thing with the Jewish star, where there's a Jewish star on some of the Henry Ford original stuff.
Because of Birnbaum.
Yeah.
So from zero to when he started making cars, this guy named Birnbaum was the guy helping giving him
underwriting
money.
Underwriting
him. Okay, so if you don't
mind.
And then
he ran out of money, and then he got some other investors and kept going and started making cars. But Birnbaum, if it wasn't for Birnbaum, he never would have got off the ground.
If you don't mind, I'd like to interrupt. And just for those who may not know what we're talking about, I think most people do. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion was a forgery. It was funded by the Tsar of Russia, and he basically turned the task over to his Secret Service, if you will, as intelligence people. And they wrote up this total fraudulent lie about the Jews. And that has been the basis of this ongoing conspiracy theory that the Jews somehow control the world and world banking and newspapers. I mean, Ted does control this newspaper,
I do not control anything around here, as evident by Julie, who has more control than I do, and then all the other people that work here too.
But the horror is that my
name's just on the check.
People still believe this story. They believe that it is true, and it's the basis of anti-Semitism over the generations. And you can still buy it on the internet. Unfortunately, and the worst thing is, think about this. The article reads: tattered copy of Protocols of Elders of Zion found at Capitol. It doesn't say where
it was found on a table in the security checkpoint. But they said it was tattered, and then they suspended one of the officers, but it doesn't. We don't know why it was there. Did he find it during the riot and he left it there at the checkpoint? And what was the Zach Fisher, who's chief of staff to Representative Mondaire Jones, a Democratic, a congressman from New York? What was he doing fishing around the Capitol Police security? It's all very strange story.
You should send an email to Carol and tell her to follow up on this article through JTA, and then Gene will follow up on it too, and see if we can get any more information on this article.
It's just altogether a weird article.
I just want to add one more comment, if you'll mm-hmm. permit me, and it's sort of a generic comment. There's been a trend in recent years of penetration of really seriously harmful conspiracy thinking, including white supremacist thinking, among police organizations mm-hmm. as well as among the military. And it's something that, for the most part, I think has been ignored. And it's a real issue. And we saw it happen during the disaster mm-hmm. that happened in the Capitol.
Right.
And it's an ongoing issue. And I do believe the military is taking it seriously now. I hope the police agencies will begin to do so as well.
I never knew that it came from the Tsar from Russia, though. Yeah. This is Nicholas.
Yeah.
This was during Nicholas.
I think the ones prior to the last one. Okay. So Nicholas II was the last one, right?
He was killed.
I think it was the one right before him.
Okay.
And,
it was like 1905, 1906. Right.
And it was the justification for disaster to the Jews.
Right, sure. It's one of the teachings of contempt. It's one of the elements of the teachings of contempt.
Well, interestingly, above that article is one about that Holocaust education passes in Wisconsin. And it's not so much to me the article about what's going on in Wisconsin. It's the fact that only 17 states out of 50, which is just slightly over a quarter, have Holocaust education.
Well,
that, to me, is a predictor of why we still have people that are ignorant.
Well, I think things spread through the states like a wildfire. So I think in a few years from now, that 17 will be up to like 30. It's still not enough. Well, it takes time.
If you want to
work their way through the political system.
Bigger picture. Think of how many of our kids really don't know anything about World War II or about history, or even our own history, American history. So it's an endemic problem.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of universities, on page 8, the petition calls on the University of Penn to move graduation ceremony. Okay. So actually, it was falling on Shavuos, speaking of the Omer.
And Shavuos is when? When is Shavuos?
It was
7 weeks from Passover.
Sundown. It starts
Shavuos May 16th.
Sunday,
it would have been
May 16th.
It starts,
May 18th.
So the students petitioned University of Pennsylvania. And when I walked in and we started talking about the newspaper, I said, well, this isn't a holiday that everybody knows about. I mean, I'm familiar with it. You guys are familiar with it. But, you know, it's not one that is traditionally very well known.
Okay,
and
well,
then you both said to me, no, this is
in the Orthodox community, it's a big deal.
Big holiday.
It's the giving of the Torah. It's when we receive the Torah.
And it's a fun holiday, you know, because you get to stay up and eat and cheesecake and study.
Dairy, a lot of dairy. Yeah.
But
I never really thought of it as a real fun holiday, but it is one of the big three.
And you've got to give kudos to University of Penn for listening to these students. I mean, what do you think their percentages are of that on that campus, and asking for them to agree to change the date? I gotta say that's a pretty a woke thing.
Okay, so there was 1,300 students and alumni that signed a petition urging the school to move the date. So I don't know how many kids are just people are at.
They said there's 17% of the students are Jewish at that school.
Okay. That's just substantial.
So I think that's pretty, but of that 17, how many of them, 20%. Of that 17, and let's think about the general population, how many of them actually celebrate Shavuos? How many do you think?
Maybe 10% of that.
Maybe less. 7 to 5, I would say.
Right. Well,
unless Hillel was offering a free cheesecake, you know,
I'm sure they are. Yeah, I'm sure they are. They got to get them in there some way. You know, you got to. Yeah, that and wine.
Yeah, but for our Melissa, that was what her bat mitzvah was. She read the Book of Ruth with her friend Shaked Avisar, and then we went to Israel, and that was her bat mitzvah. But, yeah, the whole theme was around Israel. In fact, we even did a shuk for her kids' bar. She had a kids' party for her bat mitzvah. Cool. Yeah. You know, on page 9, you are, again, looking for an assistant editor. You did get a new office manager, so that ad is gone.
Well, and Judy has retired.
You wore her out.
No, Judy was here for, I think, like 6-7 years, and she was the office manager, and Judy retired officially Tuesday and is moving to Florida. She left for Florida yesterday, or Monday was her last day, and then Tuesday she's got an apartment down there. She's driving to Florida, and she's retiring, and... So
now, she got to keep the title office manager because I was hired as the office manager, and then you demoted me to the bookkeeper.
I did, because you wouldn't shut up.
But she got to, is this new woman, is she an office manager, or is she a bookkeeper, Ted?
Well, what do I, you know, why do you always put me on the spot like this? I'm not answering. I'm pleading the fifth on that one.
Okay, well, I'm going to give a hopeful... That she stays. I'm going to give hopeful that she stays as long as Judy, because Judy's been here for a long time.
She was here for a long time.
Good for Judy.
All right, so Alyssa Jean has gotten a new job, and so her position is opening, and so she graduated about a year, and so she needed to move up, but she needed a place to get her feet wet, you know, and work in the business world, and you know that kind of stuff. And then we're very proud of her. She got a new job, and she'll be editing this. So she's listening to this right now going, she's probably smiling. Oh, you know, Ted's giving me a couple of pats on the back. So we are looking for an assistant editor.
That's nice. And she's got a graphics background as well.
She knows. Yeah, she does know graphics really well, too.
So on page 13, going back to the drawing, the Passover drawing contest.
So we run the coloring contest winners.
Right.
We ran them Passover, and then starting this week, we run them until we run out, which will be this week and next week, all the kids that have submitted a Passover drawing.
Right, and we had two Rockworn winners last week. It was the grandson of the Galinskys, the cat's boy, and then it was...
And you like this one on 13. And
yes.
You're pointing out...
I was fascinated. Yeah. This is the first time I've seen a kitchen. and not only that, but it's a beautiful...
It's like an oven.
It's got a cooktop, and it's got a vent, and it says Passover in Hebrew, and it says not here. So they're looking, it took us a while to figure it out, but they're looking for the Afikoman, and he's actually pointing out, it's Frankie Miles. I'm maybe Frankie is a female, but I'm going to assume right now it's a male.
Right.
And they're looking for the Afikoman, and they're pointing it out with an arrow, and that's the that's what
it
I
looks
believe
like
is
a, like a little like an acorn.
Yeah, something is hidden behind there. I think that's what they're trying to say, but I have to say, first of all, it's a clear, beautiful drawing.
It is very good.
And,
it's very, very nice drawing.
It's interesting, and I really find it. There's a picture of someone's face there, so it's a very clever drawing, and I'm very, very fascinated. Lenny, so tell us, what is your favorite Passover meal?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me be honest, okay? Passover is not known for necessarily for its,
culinary design.
Culinary gourmet food. Because, you know, if you cut out the flour, it's just, you know, you're limited. You're very limited. I'll tell you this. Tova, my wife, makes a dish that is really from the old world, and it's a kugel. It's a potato kugel, and the nice thing about it, it doesn't require any flour. It's just 5 ingredients, and it's absolutely stunning.
When we do Passover together, I know that she makes it, and she's brought it to her. You always have fun Passovers. So Lenny, I tell you, he always makes a creative Passover. One year, I remember having puppets.
Yes, and finger puppets, yep.
Yeah, and then Tova and both of you are amazing. Am I wrong? Did you once make a filter fish, or do you still make a filter fish from scratch?
I used to make it from scratch. Not so much anymore.
Where did you get the fish?
Kroger actually had a day or two where they would
remember when they used to have the kosher,
special kosher fish. This goes back quite a while.
That was a few years ago. Yeah. Right.
What about you? What's your favorite Passover food?
Okay, so many years ago, I went to one of these Passover getaways, and you went to it was in Stamford, Connecticut. It was like at the Westin.
Was it a singles? For singles?
Well, there were some singles there. I met a number of people there. This is before I was remarried.
Yeah, so it was like you were looking for hookups for during Passover?
Love. Anyway, I drove to New York. It's Stamford, Connecticut. It's right near New York. And I went there. And the guy, I'll never forget this, the guy that did it was this Michael Schick Catering, who've actually come to Cincinnati.
They're from New York. I remember Schick Caterers. Okay.
And you would, in the morning, first they'd have breakfast. Then they'd have, like, around 11 o'clock, they'd have, like, a snack thing.
Second breakfast.
Then they'd have lunch.
So
then
my house.
Have, like, an, I know, afternoon, they'd have, like, an afternoon snack thing.
Tea.
Then they have dinner. Then you'd have, like, an evening dinner.
It's like going on a cruise.
Yeah. I tell you, it a was night, the night most snack. Amazing food I've ever eaten. I mean, for me, from, like, a little town of Cincinnati to go to the big city like this and go to this place. And the food was just, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was I probably put on like 10, and I'm pretty skinny. I mean, I'm relatively skinny. And I probably put on 10 pounds by the time I left there, like 8 days later. And then at the end, the last thing they shut everything down. They got ready, and they had pizza.
Oh, that's
last
nice.
Last night. And then I drove, you know, then I wake up the next day and start driving home. But that pizza tasted so good.
it
was really amazing.
Did you get lucky?
I met a number of people. Nothing ever came of it. But it was because you were there with the singles Seder, and I was there with the singles Seder.
You were at the singles table.
The singles table. And it was, you know, I enjoyed myself. I mean, you know, I was there to enjoy myself. I was enjoying myself. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was really fun. A lot of people like do that every year. They'll go away. It is a lot of fun to do that.
I've always wanted to do like a Passover cruise or something. Now, Lenny,
when
you were on some of these disaster managements, did you ever have to go during Passover? Did you have it? Tell us about some of your Jewish experiences on these disaster management events.
All right. I actually, there are two that stick out in my mind. In Puerto Rico, as you know, there were twin hurricanes pretty much back to back, and it devastated the island. It devastated the entire infrastructure, water supply, the transportation. I mean, the roads were out, and people don't realize that Puerto Rico is actually fairly mountainous. And obviously the electrical supply was on and off. But I was there over Shabbat, and actually I was there a number of weeks. And one week I called the local Chabad, and there's a Chabad in Puerto Rico, in San Juan. And I spoke to the rabbi, and he said, sure, we're going to have services. Please come this and this time. And I have to tell you, they were the most delightful people I've ever met. They were wonderful. Aside from the fact that they fed everyone a Friday night meal, in the dining room, there were boxes piled up to the ceiling all over the place. And I asked the rabbi, what's going on? What
Shmura.
Is this stuff? No. What it was is a number of the people who were there that Friday had flown in from Miami, I guess, with their private planes loaded with stuff. Uh-huh. And over the succeeding week, the rabbi would drive out to the boonies, to these little villages, and distribute food.
Wow.
And let's face it, they weren't Jews. I mean, they were doing their goodness, wonderful mitzvot for the society. And this was an ongoing theme throughout the disaster. So that was made a big impression on me. And go
there
ahead.
Are I'm Jews in Puerto Rico. So my father was with Abbott Laboratories, and he opened up the plant for Abbott when I was a child. So I was in the third grade, and he would go back and forth. And at that time, of course, there was no internet. They would my parents would write letters back and forth to each other. And once in a while, he would call home. And so we ended up moving to Puerto Rico for a short period of time. And that's when I was supposed to be starting my bat mitzvah lessons. And I had I brought my record player down on my records, and I was completely unsuccessful in my attempt to learn Hebrew. But we did go one time we were going to go for Hanukkah, I think, at the synagogue, and the synagogue was inside of a church, and we get there, and it's being robbed. And I remember my father said, back in the church was being robbed at that moment, and my father got back in the car, and he said, I think we're just going to skip synagogue while we're here living in Puerto Rico. And we went home, and that was the end of that. But my mother had brought down all the with that time we kept kosher. And she brought down on dry ice the meats, and then my grandmother came to visit us, and she brought down food on dry ice, and my mother kept kosher while we lived in Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Amazing.
It's a lot easier now, I think. Yeah. And then the other piece I just quickly will mention is, I think you mentioned earlier that I did some work for the State Department, and these were training missions, again, on emergency management. And on one of those trips, I had the opportunity to visit Bosnia. Which is now called Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of immersed myself in the history, and it's a very challenging history of what went on there, you know, with the Serbs
there
and the Croatians and the Bosnians.
Ethnic cleansing.
Very, very confusing story and a lot of contradictions. But it's old world. There's a lot of Jewish history there. And one of the things that really struck me strongly was I happened to be there over Yom HaShoah. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Holocaust, memorial, which that year was in the Jewish cemetery, which was up in the hills overlooking the city. And most of the tombstones had these monstrous holes in them, and they were cannon fire because the Serbs had set themselves up in the cemetery and were bombarding the city from below. And the return fire just devastated the cemetery, and that struck me very strongly.
Good place to hide, that's what they were thinking.
Wow.
All right, so we want to, moving on to a dining out page, and Mark's Hot Bagels takes my advice. No, I'm just not. Mark's Hot Bagels now has a pizza truck.
It's amazing.
It is, and I see, I've been saying this for several years, that what this town nearly needs is a good, solid pizza. Now, you do have some pizzas over at the Mayor's and JCC at the J Cafe, but now Mark's is now making pizzas, too.
Hopefully a New York pizza.
It's they're like big pizzas. They're like 18-inch pizzas, something like that, I think.
Wow, and how do we get them to come here?
Remember we talked about the fact. Okay, so I called him. I called YY, and he's going to come over one day.
Okay.
When we're both here, because next week I'm gone. You're gone.
Yeah.
And so maybe in a couple of weeks after that, and we'll tell him to come over, and he'll come over and do the show with us and bring us a pizza to eat. Well, it has to be at their Passover.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, that's.
But it really is fantastic, and they've gotten a lot of really positive comments about their pizzas.
Yeah, you can eat pizza with matzah during Passover.
You can have matzah.
You mean matzah pizza?
Yeah, matzah pizza.
That's an obscenity.
And you could also make lasagna. My family is following the Quiniot December 2015 rule.
Didn't know you were Spanish now.
Yeah.
Now you're Spanish.
Yeah, so.
And Moroccan, too, at the same time.
The conservative movement is following the December 2015 Quiniot ruling. Lenny, I'd like to know on your opinion.
Of course. You would have put me in the spot.
What is your opinion of the Quiniot ruling?
Okay, so many other issues, there's two sides to this, and it's important because on the one hand, the fact that there's been this separation between Mizrahi and Sephardi Jews on the one hand and Ashkenazi Jews and what they can eat for Passover is actually not a good thing. It separates us, and we need to have unity.
That's a good point.
On the other hand, I think that it's important to realize that this was a movement, this was a policy decision by the conservative movement but obviously is not going to be recognized by the Orthodox movement. So in a way, it's actually divisive. So, you know, I'm a strong believer in unity of Jewish people. And so there's a problem with it, on you know, and I don't know the answer. But, you know, we'll see how that develops over the next coming years.
Right. That was a very diplomatic answer.
Yeah, he's very diplomatic. We're going to have him on as Mr. Diplomat, the Dr. Diplomatic. That's your new name. You know, everybody, if you're friends of mine... And
just call me Ambassador.
And I really like
Mr. Ambassador.
I really like you get a nickname. Your nickname will be Dr. Diplomacy and Mr. Ambassador.
Okay, I like it.
So we are coming... I was thinking this morning, I still have... No, we're on page 17. Okay. I still have two boxes left of Mott's, and I'm thinking it's almost over.
Two?
I mean, yeah, it's all
I got like a whole case.
Yeah, well, because Costco gets you to buy a whole case.
I know, they did buy
a whole case, but I had a lot of people at my house for a while. But now I'm down to two boxes, and we are on the Shabbat Shalom, the last days of Pesach. You know, we're with our Rabbi Shlomo Riskin
who always writes
Sedra of the Week. Right. And I think that Lenny also found a section here that he found very interesting that we'd like to talk about.
Well, it's, again, one of those controversial issues. And I'll give you the quote. It says, despite the fact that there is tension between particularism and universalism, between chauvinism and cosmopolitanism, both a part of the Jews' life cycle. So, many of us know that, you know, there's this conflict. You know, do you first do for the Jews? Do you do your charities for the Jews? Right. Do you help out your own
backyard,
which some people will label as being too tribal?
Right.
Or is your goal in life, is your primary principle of this religion to fix the world?
Okay.
Which is a universal perspective.
Tikkun olam. Right.
And obviously there's differences between the streams. You know, the Orthodox, I think, for the most part, probably emphasize the particular, whereas I think Reform probably emphasizes the universal, and maybe the truth lies somewhere in the middle. And I think that's what Rabbi Riskin's comment is, that really we've got to be a little bit of both.
And okay.
That not goes a, right with your answer about the Keniot rating.
Well, it's diplomatic.
Really, yeah.
I've got to, you know, live up to my name.
Mr. Ambassador. Okay. All right, so we are on From the Pages. And as Julie's phone goes off.
I had turned it to do not disturb.
Okay. All right. So in the beginning, 1854, page 18. This is from the Israelitist Institutions of Cincinnati by Samuel Brule, who I've read from many times. Since this was written, the Jewish hospital has been endowed by the late Judah Toro with $5,000. This sum will enable the directors to purchase a suitable lot and finally relieve them of the payment of the rent, which is at present one of the heaviest expenses.
Wow.
It's from July. So this is before they built the hospital, but they now have the money to buy a lot.
For $5,000.
Where was the original Jewish hospital?
It's downtown.
Then? Downtown.
Okay, so this is where they bought that land, right there.
But can you imagine $5,000 and you buy a plot of land?
Well, now that would be probably $5 million.
And the other comment I have about this is this Judah Turo is really a hero. I mean, he endowed schools and universities all over the country, and he was an incredible man. In fact, there's a Turo University or Turo College in New York, and they actually have a medical school and a nursing school and a law school. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. 125 years ago is the ladies' column. It's actually very funny, but in terms of time, I'm going to let you all read it all at home because it's very funny and you should read it. It's about cleaning and what women should be doing and whether they should revolt. So it's a pretty good one.
Revolt?
Oh, wait a minute. It says, it must be noted this revolt of certain women against housekeeping is not a revolt against their husbands.
It is simply a revolt against their duties.
Against housekeeping.
Yeah.
All right, so 50 years ago, Mr. and Mrs. Alfred Steinberg announced the forthcoming bar mitzvah of their son, David J. Steinberg, Saturday, April 3rd at 10:45 a.m. at Y Center, Reading Road and North Crescent Avenue. So we want to have a shout-out to David Steinberg, who I knew from high school.
And did you see the great pictures I put up of Jory Edlin on our social media in his wide bell-bottom blue jeans? They're not blue jeans. They're wide bell-bottom pants from his bar mitzvah party. It is a classic, and I put it to the Adam Sandler. I made a video to the Adam Sandler bar mitzvah song. It is a classic. Okay. His pictures are classic.
I hate to admit it, but I actually wore those things.
I never wore bell bottoms.
I wore elephant bells.
I love bell bottoms still. So also 50 years ago, Mrs. Israel Landman wishes to express her sincere thanks to her doctors, rabbis, friends, and relatives for their visits, cards, gifts, and contributions during her stay at the Jewish hospital, April 1st, 1971. And Len and I both talked about, we both came here exactly like 35 years ago this June. And when we first moved here, this is the way that people expressed their appreciation, was to write letters in the paper. And Barry and
I,
we used to look at this every week because I have to admit, his name was in there quite a lot when this was a tradition, and along with his partner, Sidney Cohn. They were the old-time, actually their nickname was Batman and Robin because...
Ew.
Barry.
Which one was Batman?
Barry and who?
Barry and Sidney Cohn. They used to call them Batman and Robin. I can't remember why, but that's what they used to call the two of them, Batman and Robin. So I think Barry was the Robin and Sidney was the Batman because they would make rounds together every morning.
Okay.
And I think just the way they looked, that they were Batman and Robin with their long coats blowing in the breeze or something.
Well, the medical profession has changed quite a bit, too.
Yeah, things are different then. You know, and going back to COVID and... Right. Spring and looking forward to things. Lenny, what's your prediction on herd immunity and what do you think, what's your prediction on when we will have herd immunity from your experience?
Well, firstly, you know, you have to be really gutsy and a little arrogant to make predictions in this situation, because one of the things that categorizes the last year is its unpredictability. I mean, who would have imagined that we would be in the situation we are now the number of deaths and the fact that, you know, I mean, this is an ongoing problem. So if the variants do not become a major issue, and I think everyone knows what I'm talking about, if the variants are handled by the vaccines pretty well, then I'm going to go with what Tony Fauci's prediction, which is by the end of the summer, we're going to be in great shape.
Okay.
I think it'll be before then.
But there's the other but, if you want to, you know, believe Rochelle Walensky, you know, clearly, and Tony Fauci and many of the experts, the variants may present a problem. And so that's why there's this mixed messaging, and that's why there's fear generated almost by our messages. And we just don't know. We don't know where these variants are going to go. I can tell you that the vaccine companies are very much on top of it, that they're planning to have products come out that are going to be specifically targeting these variants. But in the meantime, a lot of it's unknown, so I'm not going to make a prediction. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Okay, well, I want to know then, what is the most decadent thing you did during COVID?
I'm so boring. I'm sorry, Julie. I don't do decadent things anymore. I did when I was younger, and I'm not going to talk about them. But I don't know. I went to... Really so boring.
How about you? Did you do anything, Ted, that you shouldn't
be? Well, I'm going fishing next week.
Well, that's not really.
That's not decadent. Well, are you going to wear a mask?
No, not when I'm fishing.
I wouldn't think so.
No. When I'm out walking, I don't really wear a mask.
Well, if you're outdoors and you're away from people, then, you know, I think that's a reasonable stance.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will be now hitting the, there was a column, there's a couple of book reviews that sound good from Cheryl Pockros, and then we have an anonymous tipster or citizen informant from Marianne Bettman, and we get a lot of good positive feedback on her articles.
She is a very, very well-liked columnist.
So read her column and decide what you feel your opinion is. And
death notices. All right, so death notices, Rabbi Michael Joseph Cook, PhD, age 79, March 30th, 2021, 17 Nissan 5781.
And then we have Joel Irish Schulman, age 77, March 27th, 2021, 14th of Nissan 5781. And there is a large a write-up on him. And I'm assuming we're going to get one for Rabbi Michael Joseph Cook, who is an expert in Christianity at HUC. And and when we're talking, again, what we mentioned earlier is we are at a point in our lives where the people that we have known, our children's friends, our friends, our contemporaries are now dying. So it's a little bit
parents. These are a lot of our parents. These are our parents. So Dr. Simon Hakim, age 91, March 24, 2021, 12 Nissan 5781.
And Marion Ehrlich, age 94, March 19th, 2021, Nissan 5781. And there goes the Sadaka jar again.
There goes the Sadaka jar.
So, you know, Lenny, one of the things that we mentioned when you first came here is that you've had, in all your number of years, you've had some career changes. And,
right.
And you're very interested in career agility, that you think this is a movement of, you know, and this is something for us to think about as we're thinking about, you know, we're at a certain point in our lives. We're almost like on the third frontier. You know, you grow up, then you get married and have kids, and then you hit this next frontier. And that's kind of, you know, you're winding down of what you did, what you your hopes and dreams, and settling in on what didn't come. But now a lot of us get to change. I mean, I'm certainly a chameleon. I've done a million things, and I've had a lot of fun with each thing I've done. And when I get bored with it, I move on.
So we've heard about the holla back holla.
Holla back girl holla.
Which were, by the way, delicious.
I still make them, and Lenny can eat them at his house, so I bring them over.
Not this week.
Not this week, but yeah, I bring them over.
Not this week. So even though Julie's probably making them this week.
No, I am not. I didn't even have one this Friday because I wanted to keep my house clear. In fact, I had one hard bagel left, and it was a jalapeno, which I love, the Mark's hot bagel. Hey. And I took a bite, and my jaw cracked, and I thought, see, that's a sign I need to stop for a week eating the hard bagels. So, Lenny, let's talk about career agility for a moment. And
I'm convinced that as part of the changes that have happened in the last couple of decades, I think that the mentality where we devote ourselves to one career for our entire working life is really becoming outdated. And you see it especially in the millennials. But you know, the fact that now the average lifespan has increased and it's not unusual to have parents and friends who live into their 90s.
Right.
The idea of retiring at 65, it seems so strange.
Maybe 75.
Okay. Well, 75 is better. But, you know, I mean, Social Security starts at that age.
Right.
So, you know, we're still living in the past a little bit because, let's face it, for many of us, as long as our health holds out and our brains are lucid, there's no reason to retire at 65 unless you choose to. If you love to fish and you love being down in Florida, all that's great. And if you're a golfer.
Right.
But if you... There's absolutely a trend where people are adopting new things in their post-retirement, whether it's volunteering or whatever it is. And I can speak for myself. I've been through literally three careers, and I'm seeing that millennials do this routinely.
Right.
It's part of the expectation. No one thinks that they're going to be working say for P&G for 40 years and then that's it, they pack it in because that's not the reality we live in anymore.
Right.
Okay. Very true. And when COVID is over, what is the first thing you're going to do when it's officially over? Do you have a plan?
I do have a plan. We'd love to go and visit family and friends in Israel. It's been a long time since we've been there and it's overdue, and I think Tova and I are really looking forward to that.
Is Israel still shut down?
They've opened for some flights. I think they permitted up to 3,000 people a day in the airport.
But you have to have dual citizenship at this point.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, because a friend of mine can't get in to see her son, so she's actually applying to have dual citizenship.
Oh, and you know what? Remember that guy that got married to the model last year? They just had a baby.
Oh, nice. That's good. That's Jews in the news. Yeah.
Remember that she was like this really pretty model.
And he was kicked out. His mother was very famous. He got kicked out of Israel because he didn't do his 10 days of or two weeks of isolation, and he was more interested. Yeah. Well, he had other thoughts. His lower brain was working, and he decided to slip out of isolation.
Yeah. They take it seriously.
She's a model, like Rafi.
Oh, that's a different model. This is a different model.
She was really good looking.
Speaking of models and skinny and not eating, yeah. There's a Rhino's coupon as well as a coupon for
yogurt.
Breadsmith on the back page.
Yeah, Breadsmith and yogurt.
For next week.
Yes.
And now it is time for joke of the week. I don't pre-read them.
Really good. Yeah. This one was it's so-so. All right, so this is from The Best of American Jewish Humor by Henry D. Spaulding. A boy looked up from the editorial page of the newspaper he had been reading. "Dad," he said, "tell me, what exactly is diplomacy?" "Well, son," began the father, clearing his throat, "if you were to say to an ugly girl, your face would stop a clock, that would not only be undiplomatic, but very unkind as well. However, if you said to that same homely girl, when I look into your eyes, time stands still, you'd be saying the same thing, but that, my boy, would be diplomacy. Okay.
Well, it's been a real honor and pleasure.
Yeah, it has been a pleasure.
Privilege to
it's
have
been great
you.
Fun
Dr. Diplomacy here.
Thank you for having me.
The ambassador. And also, I have to mention that he leads services at Minka Mariv that I go to. Say Kaddish, because he's been saying Kaddish for mom, and so do I say Kaddish for my mom. So we see each other regularly.
Well, when you graduated, so you went to Brooklyn. You didn't go to Yeshiva University, but when you were, you didn't get a rabbinical certificate from the Yeshiva
stuff. No. By that point, I had enough.
Yeah. Okay, good to know. Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been a good day, and next week you're going to be out in the fishing in the lake.
I will be. I'm fishing in streams.
In a stream. Don't forget to wear your life jacket.
I don't need a life. I'm in the streams. I'm not really,
And what do you call that suit that you put on? That
waders.
Waders, yeah.
Waders. I have chest high. I have like waist high waders.
Yeah.
And what are you going to catch?
Steelhead.
Nice.
It's like a hybrid trout.
It's related to trout and salmon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they're big, really big rainbow trout.
Nice.
Big suckers like this big.
So. You remember when we were kids and our fathers used to wear those rubbers over their shoes, when they went outside?
Right.
No one does that anymore.
I still have a pair of those at the house. Yeah. But I never wear them.
Probably can't say that either.
No, you can say them. Because most, if you were going to go out in the rain nowadays, you would probably silicone spray your leather shoes so that they were waterproof. But they didn't have, I don't think they had silicone spray back then. They would have to use like mink oil or something.
I don't think they had too many pairs of shoes. Maybe that was part of it.
Yeah, not like us where they have rain shoes, hiking shoes, running shoes.
We have like 1,000 pairs of shoes, yeah. So anyway, it's been a wonderful week. It's Passover week. And then when I return, it will no longer be Passover. It'll be time to start eating. And then I'll be gone and you're gone. And then we'll meet again for pizza.
Anyway, have a Shavua Tov for everyone, a good week for everyone.
Everybody have a great trip and a good, safe trip up and back. And thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you, Julie. It's been great fun.
Take care. Bye-bye.